But we'll be big, said the Baron. Voraz, you desperately need somebody to back you. You need visible assets. Without them, you will fold, right? Voraz looked at him, glaring. Then he hung his head. True. McAdam said, So we're willing to bail you out, right, Johnny? Johnny shrugged. Let them go ahead. There was going to be more to this fight. Voraz looked from McAdam to the Baron very watchfully. The Baron said, So, the Earth Planetary Bank is offering to buy 2/3 of the Galactic Bank. What? Cried Voraz. That's a controlling interest. You would control the whole vast empire of the Galactic Bank. He thought about it for a moment. And with what? The Baron smiled. We will buy it with 2/3 of a quadrillion credits worth of planets. He drew another sheet from the papers beside him. Pending further evaluation, a planet is worth a minimum of 60 trillion credits. Voraz said, To be honest, most are worth considerably more. The Baron said, You'd have assets, then. You could back your currency with reserves which you don't now have. The Cyclos never let you own planets, but you can now. We will turn over 11 planets that are worth 60 trillion credits for the ownership of 2/3 of the Galactic Bank, all its assets, debts, everything. Lord Voraz was wavering, but he had not said yes. McAdam leaned back easily. And we will put 199,989 planets and all company assets into a trust to be managed by the Galactic Bank. That gives you back your fund transfer profits. That lets you lease out mining rights. That surely saves your bank. Wait, said Lord Voraz. And they thought he was going to turn it down. I must be honest with you. You took your list of planets from the Intergalactic Coordinate Firing Table. It does not include the mine reserve planets. To push off all the planets it could on Intergalactic, and to bleed the company, there was an imperial decree that Intergalactic Mining Company had to own 5 planets for every one it actively mined. There is a list of 1 million additional planets recorded in the Hall of Legality with their coordinates, unexploited by Intergalactic. Also, I am afraid Dries never gave you the actual purchase contract for this planet. You keep speaking of it in the singular. It includes 9 other planets in this system and all moons, mentioned in passing because they are deemed worthless. There are also suns and nebulae and clusters. There is obviously an awful lot of intergalactic property you don't know about. Would you leave it up to us to ferret it out and include that in the bank-managed trust also? McAdam smiled. Seem all right to you, Baron. Find any flaws in that, Johnny? Johnny thought about it. There was another situation here they were evidently overlooking, but he saw nothing wrong with what the Earth Bank was doing. With a hand outstretched to Lord Voraz, McAdam said, We agree. Voraz had made his point. He started to reach for the hand, and then he drew back. Such a deal has to be ratified by a Galactic Bank board meeting. The Baron laughed. Good. Let's hold one. They can be convened anywhere in 16 universes, according to your charter. Wait, said Lord Voraz. There are 12 other board members, rich, influential Salachis, who are... Scared to death, the Baron finished for him. The state of the bank, and the riots, made them believe they will lose all their personal property and fortunes if the bank went under. So they thought this was a great offer. Voraz gaped. But they can't hold a board meeting behind my back. Oh, they didn't, said the Baron. They gave me all their proxies, and these delegate to me the right to place their votes. He reached down and threw another pack of documents on the table. There they are. Lord Voraz stared at them. He recognized the personal seals. They had even been filed at the Hall of Legality. So, as chairman, said the Baron, would you please convene a board meeting of the Galactic Bank at once, and move that the Earth Planetary Bank buy 2/3 of the Galactic Bank. It will have to be a typed resolution, said Boraz. I do hereby convene the meeting. I even have my seals. But here's the resolution, said the Baron. All typed. I'm awfully glad you're convening the meeting, for it saves the trouble of going back to Snouch and getting you fired. Boraz laughed suddenly. You are a pair of hard rock eels. That was typed by my own secretary. That's her initial. Right, right, said the Baron. A charming girl. She was trying to save your and her jobs. Now, just sign there as chairman of the board and president. Wait, said Boraz, suddenly sober and worried. This is all very well, but there are 3 things that could ruin this whole deal and all of us. Dries interjected, The first is how do I get my money, cash, right now, for the mortgage here? Oh, that, said McAdam. He scooped up a huge sheet of paper which unfolded yards long. This is the intergalactic mining money transfer summary from your bank. It says that on day 92 of last year, there were certain intergalactic funds in process of transfer. They were given over to the bank for further relay, but the bank, of course, was thereafter unable to relay them. Payments for metals, salaries, they're all listed here. They are still in your bank. That's all intergalactic money. When we were in Snouch, we started an account for the Earth Planetary Bank. Let's see. The total of received and unrelayed funds from 200,000 planets for their past month was 209,438,971,438,643 credits. That's our money. Just subtract the mortgage from it, and it still leaves us about 168 trillion. McAdam rummaged around in his pile of papers. Here's our letter of authorization, and here is the receipt for you to sign, Dries. The small gray man was sitting there speechless. He was trying to realize he was solvent. He had not thought to recover more than 10 trillion in a forced sale. He sat up and grabbed a pen to sign the receipt. Lord Voraz stopped his hand. That's all very well, he said in a worried voice, but there are 2 other matters. He turned to Johnny. Can you forgive us for trying to treat you as a hired hand, Sir Lord Johnny? It is quite true that we cannot operate at all without transshipment rigs and consoles. We are cut off. We used to ship all bank business on the Cyclo rigs, using our own bank boxes. They charged us heavily, but to deliver a dispatch by spaceship can cost 50,000 credits and takes ages. Are you going to help us in this? That's all Johnny's, said McAdam. We at the bank don't own any part of it. Johnny, we can make you a loan at low interest and help you set up a manufacturing plant, a separate company that you own. How about it? 2. Johnny roused himself. He had been so intent upon finance that he had to consciously force himself to think about technical matters. It would be dangerous for Earth to have these consoles scattered through 16 universes, thousands, possibly hundreds of thousands of rigs in not always friendly or well-meaning hands run by other races. You could do a lot of things with a console. You could transport people, send dispatch boxes, ship ores, ship finished goods, send food. But you could also send bombs, as he himself had proven so fatally to the Cyclos, and as would have been the end of the Tallneps. He had not thought much about the problem. Many other things had been very urgent. Yes, one console out there, much less 500,000, could be very dangerous to this planet. Give me a moment, he said. Mr. Tsung also had his uses for the moment and brought them some tea and a tray of bites between meals. It was nearing lunchtime. It also, as he had wisely noted, gave Johnny a needed moment to think. The Cyclos had had Cyclo operators. It didn't make much difference about the platform and rig. The same security measures could be used in the console itself, possibly even improved a bit. If he put a camera in the armored front of the case that would shoot a picture of every cargo... Aha! Metal analysis detectors. If they were built into the platform itself, they could analyze a cargo from all sides, above and below, and if that were connected to a circuit no one could get at in the console, and if that circuit had a metal tracer... Yes. If anything in a cargo matched forbidden traces like uranium or this ultimate bomb heavy element, the match of the circuit would separate a relay and the console would not fire. It was a trifle difficult to think with all these faces staring at him, waiting. He didn't have to be told, the fate of the banks depended upon it. And they hadn't mentioned a thing which could queer the whole deal. If he got with Allen and McKendrick and worked out disease, they said it had an aura. Anyway, there were disease viruses and bacterial traces, and he could work those in, whether disease had an aura or not. And if anything on the platform matched, they would trigger that relay, and the console wouldn't fire. He could rig it so if any of such items were put on platforms for Earth, he could tie in the coordinates of Earth so that the console would blow up. Then, if a sign were put on every console in plain view, like, "Any attempt to fire contraband cargo with this console will render it inoperative," no list of things, or else somebody might try to mask the trace. And if one added, "Any attempt to use this console in an act of war against Earth will cause it to explode," maybe even put out that the console could read evil intentions. Yes, he could build a foolproof console. And if the console seemed to be finally assembled in a place which was not known by people who could not be found, he could make the construction areas very heavily defended. He would let only a very trusted, unbribable few do the final assembly, start a school for extraterrestrial operators who knew only how to operate it. "I think I can do that," he told them. They all brightened up. Mr. Tsung took the tray away. "However," said Johnny, "the rigs will be a bit expensive. Unimportant. And I will not sell them, I will only lease them. Every 5 years a console will have to be exchanged for a new one. That would keep going an Earth that had no real income, and it would permit an inspection of views of cargoes that had been shipped. Some extraterrestrial firm will have to be brought in to make components and cases. Otherwise it will take too long to build one."
"You can provide consoles?" asked Lord Voraz.
"He said he could," said the Baron. "If Johnny says he is going to do something, watch it. He will."
"All right," said Lord Voraz. "That brings us now to the most serious block of all." He pointed in the direction of the big conference room. "Those emissaries." Voraz looked very gloomy. "You are almost in the intergalactic banking business now, and will be if this resolution is signed. You had better understand that it is very tricky business handling such as those." "As you noted," he continued, "right now they have countries in riot. Their economies are in rags. But they are of such a nature that they will just sit there square in the middle of their prejudices, cling to their most arrogant opinions, and ignore everything else. Right this minute, I have better reason than you to know they are absolutely counting on war to save their economies and their states. They think that war powers and war hysteria will distract the people and secure their own positions. It is their only formula. This bank lived in the shadow of the powerful, even if hated, cyclos. They are gone. You, and even the Gradites, are small planets. You have no great military force. To be blunt, those lords will not respect you. I read the ripples in the water with Lord Schlime. He supposed the bank was no longer the power it had been. He thought he could violate a conference. He failed. But that kind of thinking couldn't have existed a mere 13 months ago. Others among those haughty lords will get the same ideas sooner or later." He pointed to the papers. "You have here more than 1,200,000 habitable useful worlds. It is very tasty bait for very big fish. Since these lords are bent on war to save their regimes, they will find a pretext not to respect the ownership of intergalactic Earth or the bank. They will raid these planets. They will quarrel over them. They will throw good sense and order to the winds and waves. The harder they are driven at home by economic chaos, the more they will seek a pretext to take outlaw actions.
Johnny was listening to him. He had wondered for some time now when they would get around to this point. It was the key problem, and if it were left unhandled, all the doors they were trying to open would jam shut in their faces.
"Since I have been here," said Lord Voraz, "not one of those elegant aristocrats has failed to draw me aside and try to discuss his nation's chances for a war loan. Of course, we seldom make war loans. All we do is issue the bonds for them and let them sell them to each other. There's no real money in war loans. With economics this shaky, the chances of their being paid back are poor. Wars are not as popular with the people who fight them as with the lords who run them and profit by them. Revolutions could occur, and revolutionaries are notorious as bad risks. So before you commit yourselves to these risks, you should understand them."
Johnny stood up. These small gray men had not signed anything yet. He had been afraid there would be a quibble. He picked up his helmet and silver wand. "Sir Robert and I discussed this. We rehearsed it. It is risky, but I believe we have no choice. Do I have the temporary right, granted by all of you, to set bank policy for the next couple of hours? If it is successful, you will not be the losers. If I am not successful, you won't have lost anything."
"You set bank policy?" gaped Lord Voraz.
"Let him do it," said the Baron.
"But he might commit us to some course of..."
"You just better say yes, Lord Voraz," McAdam said. "That's Johnny Tyler there who's talking."
Lord Voraz looked numbly from McAdam to the Baron.
"I've not signed yet."
"Nor have I," said Dries.
The Baron reached over and made Voraz's head bob.
"He said yes, Johnny. Go ahead."
"But he might do something dangerous,"
Lord Voraz was trying to sputter.
"He is a very peculiar young man."
Johnny had already left with Sir Robert, a Sir Robert with a grim expression on his face. 3. The bowl of the firing platform area had been stripped of tarpaulins. A Russian trooper stood in each rifle pit, the noonday sun harsh on their white tunics and glittering weapons. A few emissaries lounged in the shade under the pagoda eaves. Johnny called for the host and ordered him to get the lords into the conference room. Stormalong, hearing the stir, popped out of the ops room with a dispatch in his hands, intending to rush over to where Sir Robert and Johnny stood. But the broad arm and bandaged hand of Colonel Ivan stopped him.
"Leave them alone," Colonel Ivan managed in English.
He had his orders. He stood and watched the emissaries going in the conference room door. He knew Johnny would be going in there in a moment, and he knew what Johnny was going to do. It made him a little nervous for Johnny, since he would have no direct protection in there. A casual glance had told him that many of these lords were secretly armed, for all their fine clothes and arrogant ways. When Johnny gave them the shock that was planned, they might react in violence.